Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. The sound of a pipe organ can literally rumble the floor beneath your feet. The sounds they make can be grand and imposing, or delicate and intimate, or something in between. It all depends on the combination of stops, keyboards, and foot pedals the music calls for.
And at the Church of the Jesu on West Wisconsin Avenue, there are 4 keyboards, at least 40 stops, a full footboard, as well as 20 foot stops to choose from.
Sound engineer Jason Reavy and I traveled the 12 blocks from the studio to the choir loft at Jesu to meet Dean Roscoe, the principal organist at the church, and John Gillick, an internationally acclaimed soloist and specialist in the organ music of 20th century French composer Olivier Messiaen. Gillick began by performing a piece that mimics birdsong. Can you tell me what it is that we just heard?
That's the song of a musician thrush. And this piece by Messiaen called Verset, which was written in 1960, is about a 10-minute piece that's centered around 2 major solos of this bird. And I don't know if you know that Messiaen not only was a musician, but he was also an ornithologist. These are real transcriptions of bird songs, not just made up.
Not just a musician's fancy of what they were.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right.
That is quite amazing. And to hear it on this organ, too, you know, we're sitting with you here on the bench, and there are 4 keyboards, there are pedals, there are various push pedals, as well as stops all over the place. But that was just on the one keyboard.
That's right. Well, a bird only has 1 timbre, doesn't it?
I suppose it does.
And yeah. I was once told that birds don't sing with rubato either. So that's an important thing to remember when interpreting Messiaen's birds. They're full of all kinds of touch marks, which means that the birds have different ways of attacking and releasing, but no rubato, or very little.
So, Dean, when this was all coming together, how did you feel about getting John to come and perform here?
That's a wonderful opportunity.
Well, we should say you are the church organist, is that correct? Yes. So normally you're sitting at this bench.
Correct.
How is it hearing him?
It's fascinating to me to hear everybody's interpretation of the instrument. We run an active concert series here, so to hear different approaches to the organ and the instrument I sit before every week has totally different personalities. And to have a chance to hear a master interpreter of such a noted composer is a really wonderful opportunity for me and for everyone.
Well, we should talk a little bit about the instrument that we are sitting in front of and standing in front of. This is a good example of a type of organ, and I know anyone who's gone to church has seen a pipe organ, but this has some extra things, is that correct?
For a church organ, it's to the large side. It's the largest pipe organ in the state of Wisconsin, just by metric, and It's got a lot more variety is what that amounts to than your average church organ, certainly.
Yeah. And so when you talk about variety, you're talking about sounds it can make?
Correct. Yeah. Different orchestral qualities, strings, reeds, clarinets, trumpet sounds, tuba sounds, all of those sorts of good things.
Could you give me a sample of what, say, a reed sound?
Well, there are many, many kinds of reeds. Here's a clarinet. All 8-foot pitches, and then you add the 16s and 8s, and those are all different kinds of reeds.
And when you talk about the 16s and the 8s, you're talking about that's the length of pipe that is being sounded?
That's the length of pipe that's being sounded, but it also tells you what octave it's being played in.
Okay.
8-foot pitch is what you hear when you play any note on the piano. Then 4-foot pitch automatically adds the octave above that, and 16-foot pitch adds the octave below that, and 32-foot pitch adds the octave below that.
And I understand that this organ has 3 32 pitches?
There are 3 full-length 32-foot extensions in this organ, yes.
And that's rare, right?
It's rare to have one. Yes.
So I'm sorry, John, we're going to have to hear the deep ones. I think we just blew out our sound equipment. That is amazing. So that's contrabombard.
Yes.
And then there's a contraviolon.
So that adds a purring underneath.
You hear the air.
It just supports the whole organ and adds richness and warmth. And
that's beautiful. And then there was one more, and that's the contrabourdon. Similar.
But quieter. And with less pitch definition.
Okay. And so was Messiaen one of the people that used those deep tones?
Oh, absolutely.
I know Franck did, and I know Bach did.
Well, that's a part of the organ. It's an inescapable part of the organ.
But not all composers ventured that far.
Well, it depends on their style and what they want, but in any kind of full organ sound, it's always wonderful to have the 32, but many organs don't have it.
So 16 is the farthest they go?
Nearly any organ would have a 16-foot, but 32-foot, no.
And so, Dean, I understand this organ was refurbished not too long ago, within the last 10 years.
Yes, in 2011. Yeah.
So what was done to it?
The whole instrument was removed in its entirety and taken to the Schanz Organ Company factory in Orrville, Ohio. Everything was renewed and refurbished, reconditioned to like new condition. The console is new. All the mechanism is new. There are a lot of heritage pipes, a lot of old pipes in the organ, the oldest of which date back to 1886. So 9 builders' work is represented in the sounds you hear in this organ, ranging from 1886 in Johnson Organ Company all the way to 2011 in Schanz Organ Company. So there's a pretty wide variety of eras represented as well in terms of organ building. So with each era, you get a different philosophy, but Schanz did a masterful job in blending them all together and making it not only a cohesive, but a brilliant ensemble.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. It's like you've got a century of difference in terms of metals, mm-hmm. things have aged differently,
yes,
people
absolutely.
Build things differently, and how to make it all sound like one instrument.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a lot of 1895 Kimball in this instrument, which was the original instrument this present one is based off of. And there's a lot of 1955 Kilgan. The Kilgan Organ Company undertook the last really major renovation of this instrument in 1955. So there's a lot of their work represented in this instrument as well.
And John, I have to ask, to me it's similar to a pianist. Every time you sit down at a new organ, it's like, yes, you know the instrument, but it's a brand new instrument to you. Does it take time to get comfortable with it?
It takes a long time to get to know any instrument really well. It's always frustrating to arrive and have to give a concert in a few days and not really know the organ, and that only comes with time.
Yes, you get to learn its idiosyncrasies.
Well, yeah. How the stops combine with one another and what really makes the most beautiful sounds. That's not an easy job, and you have to listen very carefully.
When you talk about what stops combine, that's not dictated by the music? The composer doesn't tell you
that? In most French organ music, yes, it's written in. But that registration, the selection of stops, will only work on the instrument that it was written for. So it's the interpreter's job to find out how best to adapt that to another organ. And that's not always easy either.
Would you mind giving us a little demonstration of something else very different from the bird songs, just so we can hear some of the other colors and timbres of the organ?
Well, I don't know how much you want to hear, but the bird songs are surrounded by plain song.
Okay.
Which is very interesting. And the beginning has three sections. It begins with the Alleluia for the feast of the dedication of a church, all alone on the clarinet. And that's answered by some soft stops on another manual. And then the melody comes in the pedal on a flute forefoot, accompanied by the strings. And he calls that to be played like a lullaby. And then that is answered by a third section on very soft stops. And he says that is the consolation.
Thank you so much. And I'm looking at the music over your shoulder as you're performing that and thinking, that is very complicated. You studied with him, did you not?
Yes, I did.
That must have helped so much when you were starting to work on his pieces.
Well, I'll tell you, I learned all of Messiaen's organ works before I ever met him. And at the end of the period of doing that, I did it in a year, which is very fast. I felt like I knew the man. And yet, the stories that I heard from all of my contemporaries was just the opposite. So I wanted to go study with him to find out if I was right. And I met him in New York in 1976, and he invited me to come and be a member of his class as his friend. And so I went, and I found out I absolutely knew who he was. He's a true musician, and just like all true artists, they can only reveal themselves in their works, not something they aren't.
What did your contemporaries say about
him? They thought he was crazy, said he'd been in an insane asylum, and all sorts of weird things. But it's funny how people get stories mixed up, because it's actually a very sad story, because when Messiaen came back from the war, you know, he was a prisoner of war in the Second World War, and he wrote his quartet for the end of time while he was in captivity. But when he came back, he found his wife, Claire Delbos, was losing her mind. And for the next 20 years, he was more or less taking care of her, and they had a young son, And for the last 10 years of her life, or about that, she was in a home. And during the 50s, she died in 1959. He wrote practically no music.
So you're here, and Dean, I'm going to bring you in on this as well. You're here as part of the American Guild of Organists.
It's primarily through their efforts that we're able to present this on Sunday. A masterclass is happening on Friday where various students and performers will have the opportunity to come and perform the music of Messiaen and gather Mr. Gillick's thoughts about the music, their interpretation of it. It's a neat opportunity, a really nice opportunity to be able to do that.
And then we hear a performance by you on Sunday, is that correct?
Yes. And preceding that, there's also a panel discussion, I think, about Messiaen, which could interest a lot of people, a nice introduction to people that don't know his music. On first hearing, a lot of people may find his music very strange, but it's funny. He considered his music to be modern, but he said it's also very romantic. And in all of his music, once you get to know it, you know, that's the essence of it. But the other essence of it is that it's really very spiritual. And if you let it, it can transport you to far, far away. Sometimes I play a concert and I have no idea where I've been or what I did because it's very moving.
Can you leave us with a little something of his that moves you?
Well, I think it's always the quiet pieces that are most moving, but the loud ones are overwhelming, and that makes the quiet ones even more special when they come. This is a very, all Messiaen pieces are very special, but the suite I'm playing on Sunday is about Christmas, is about the birth of Christ, and so this one is about the shepherds. I'll play the statement, simple, loud, and then I'll play the echo, ornamented and quiet. How's that?
That sounds perfect. And before you do, I just want to say thank you for taking time.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Dean Roscoe is the principal organist at the Church of the Jesu on the Marquette campus. John Gillick is an internationally renowned organist specializing in the music of 20th century French composer Olivier Messiaen.
Gillick performs a concert of Messiaen's organ music this Sunday at 3 at the Church of the Jesu. There's more information at wuwm.com.